Part 2. The War for Caedia. Chapter 1. Casamirac, Caedia Secundus, Day 107 of the War for Caedia. On the scuffed blackboard of the ruined scholar, the lesson for the day was still drawn in chalk. Do not waste your tears. I was not born to watch the world grow dim. For the students of Scholar 5, Guildquarter, Casamirac, teaching had ended when the War for Caedia had begun, right there, in mid-sentence. But Minka knew the end of the quote. Every Caedian knew it. She'd spent hours as a child reciting her quote's imperium. She paused. Minka had been a student here just 4 years earlier. Her mind's eye looked back into her own past. The hall full of young cadets, girls with their hair cut military short, boys leaning by the locker doors, the tall, bearded scholar major standing with one arm braced against the wall, talking armoured tactics with a slight blonde cadet in ponytails. Minka allowed herself a second's indulgence. She smelled the carbolic soap on her freshly pressed clothes, the metallic scent of gun lubricant on her hands, the thrill of an hour about to be spent in the Imperial Chapel. But she could feel the impatience of her partner, Yegor, the last survivor of the 93rd Mordian Iron Guard. Medipacks, guns, ammo, battery packs, food. There had to be something here of use. Minka barely noticed the stink as she picked her way around the room, then into the officer's mess. Locker doors hung open, books and files and scraps of paper littered the floor. There was a bloodstain on the polished tiles, the puddle smeared where the body had been dragged away. Three bodies lay half buried under the fallen roof girders at the end of the corridor. They'd been there for weeks. The hollows of their eyes had filled with dust as snow filled a winter footprint. She checked the pockets of the dead men and got half a low stick and a hand-worn Aquila charm. Anything? The Mordian asked. Just this. She held out the Aquila. She wasn't an idiot. She kept the low stick for herself. Fighting broke out on Euphrates Street. There was a flash of a flare, the crump of a mortar, then the dull rattle bursts of a distant autocannon. Neither paused. You only heard the shells meant for someone else. Minka led them through the doorway into the enclosed square of the drill yard. The rockcrete slabs were marked with white lines. Someone had set up a water stand, but the metal drum was riddled with auto-rifle rounds, and the bottom was empty. Minka pointed. Look! Yegor couldn't see anything. There, she said, and took his arm. A gun barrel. Can you see it? Yegor squinted. Cover me, he said. Minka crouched in the corner of the yard, las carbine to her shoulder, as Yegor carefully picked his hand and footholds. He slipped back a little as he made his way to the broken window. The iron shutters hung by a single hinge. Yegor had to work his way round to the exposed side of the building. Minka caught his look and moved across the yard to cover him. A pair of corpses hung from the cast-iron streetlights at the front of the school. The dead bodies revolved slowly on their axis. They had not been there yesterday. Minka slid her lascarbine forward. She gave a low warning whistle, and Yegor paused and pointed. Heretic, his signal said. Minka nodded and put her carbine to her shoulder. It was time to kill. The captains of Battlefleet Caedia had kept their ships at the highest state of preparedness. They had battered the Black Fleet on its approach to the planet until the terrible understanding came to them that they had been trying to fend off only a single squadron of Abaddon's great armada. When the full strength of the despoiler had arrived at Caedia, it had smashed its way through the veteran defences, orbital and fleet-based, and it had turned the skies of Caedia black, blotting out the sun and stars. Landers, battleships, tankers and dropships had clustered over Caedia like flies on a corpse. Orbital bombardments had brought night as debris was thrown into the stratosphere. Then the first landings brought millions of cultists to the planet. Where they came from, or what these fanatics called themselves, Minka didn't know or care. The cultists were undisciplined, untrained, unable to hold their own against the elite Caedian troops. All they had was madness and ferocity. It was like fighting rabid dogs. In Casamirac, the loyalists had dubbed them the Unnamed. Minka let the unnamed come forward. He was gaunt, hive-whirled pale, his hands shaking. There was blood about his mouth. It didn't look like his. He had not seen her. Minka braced herself. The lasbolt hit him in the gut, and he went down like a wounded spider, bent double, legs and arms scrabbling wildly in the air. The second shot hit him high in the chest. This time his body fell back against the rockrete road slabs, and blood began to puddle about him. Magister House lay in unnamed territory, 3 blocks south, between Euphrates Street and Statue Square. Rattling sniper Belag Grack lay on the 7th floor and waited. He had been behind enemy lines for 3 days now. The fighting had swirled around and through the building and passed on again, like a tornado or a tidal wave, and now he was among them. It was how he fought. A small, secretive shadow waiting for his moment to strike. A mortar team here, an officer there, just enough to keep the enemy disoriented and wary. 8 floors up, with las batteries for 150 shots. 150 dead heretics. Belag crawled forward. An unnamed war party was making their way along Chapel Street, hunched like they were running into a storm. Belag picked out the leader. He wore a commissar's greatcoat and had a pair of heads hanging in his belt, a sword in his hand. The heads were fresh. One looked like demo expert Drawling, the other like his bombmaker, Eddard. Belag didn't waste time checking. He flipped the safety off, sucked in a few long breaths, and aimed. Nothing scared men more than a sniper shot, but the unnamed didn't even pause. They didn't duck. Even the man he had shot. The lasbold had hit him low in the back and his legs were gone, but he was pumped full of stims and he moved like a two-legged lizard, arms dragging him along the street, a smear of blood on the rock creek behind him. Minka heard a shout. More unnamed were coming. She hissed up at Yegor to be quick, and he caught the end of a gun barrel and yanked. A stream of rock creek dust slid down as he pulled himself higher. "It's jammed," he hissed back, and lifted an iron girder to yank the ammo feed free. The square metal box set off an avalanche of rubble and dust. It hit the ground with a full thud of stubber rounds. Lemordian put his shoulder under the girder. The shouts were coming closer. They must have seen the body. "Come on," Minka called, and Yegor put a hand under the girder and gave it a shove. The fizz of a fuse gave her a bare moment's warning. She caught Yegor's eye. It was clear he understood. The bomb went off. Captain Rath Sturm had seen everything the galaxy could throw at him, and he had the scars, metal skull plate, and augmetic eye to prove it. He'd earned his veteran stripes on Armageddon. A man who'd fought greenskins was hard to scare. He was the commander of the survivors within the city. He'd risen to that position not by rank or promotion, but because he looked after each and every one of his fighters as if they were his own flesh and blood. As the unnamed hunted for survivors of the explosion, he came at a run, vaulting a sandbagged doorway, heavy inward-curved brimlock kukri in one hand, bolt pistol in the other. The first 3 unnamed spun backwards as the mass reactive shells punched into them. The 4th was upon him before Rath could fire. Rath ducked an axe and cut upwards, slashing the heretic's throat out with his heavy kukri, shouldered the corpse out of the way, and drove forward. He took position in a doorway. "Find them!" Rath shouted to the men who followed in his wake. He did not look behind. He knew they would hear. He knew there were more unnamed to kill. He shot them as he charged down the street. Sergeant Tarvey found Yegor first. He was still breathing, but not for long. He moved on. "Here!" Guardsman Gunnell said. There was a boot sticking out from the rubble. Tarvey pulled at the blocks and threw them aside. If one was Yegor, the other had to be Minka.
"Is she dead?"
Gunnell said.
"I don't know," Tarvey hissed, as he pulled the blocks of rockrete aside.
There was rockrete in her mouth and nose. Minka kicked against the rubble as the hands reached down to free her. They dragged her up. She spat the grit from her mouth, stood unsteadily on her feet, carbine still in hand, and blinked her vision clear. Someone was holding her face. It was Tarvey, his wide blue eyes staring at her. His mouth was moving, the explosion was still ringing in her ears. She read his lips.
"Get back,"
he was shouting. But she could not. Tavi seemed to understand. He pointed. The blast had reshaped the rubble before her. It had reshaped Yegor, too. His arm ended in a torn and ragged mess of cloth and flapping flesh. His legs were wrong. His body was folded in two.
Get back! Tavi shouted.
One of the heretics had an autogun with a round barrel. It flashed as it sprayed the wall above her head. Tavi shoved her, but Minka would not leave.
Yegor!
She shouted, but it was too late for debate. She was thrown over her shoulder, her ribs bruising as whoever carried her jogged along, and found herself staring down at the ground, 8 feet below her.